Welcome to Recast, presented by the Baptist Union of Scotland. Each episode will look at a key issue of mission or discipleship for church leaders in Scotland. We will be bringing you key voices, practical insights and unique stories, all focused on the church in Scotland.
Hi everybody and welcome to the Recast. My name is Lisa Holmes and I'm here with my colleague and apparently friend since a couple of podcasts back, Glenn Innes. Say hi, Glenn.
Hi, Glenn.
And we are continuing with this series around healthy leaders. And so, Glenn, do you want to tell us what we're looking at today?
Yeah, we're looking at physical health. I find this one a little challenging. Anyway,
I'll not make a comment. It would be way dangerous to do that.
Yeah, I'm like, you were my friend. when we were looking at this one, we wondered whether we would get one of the many doctors that are in the churches to do that. And we thought, no, that's not really the kind of thing we're looking for. Mm-hmm. And one of us said, oh, what we really need is a theologically qualified physical trainer. And we went, wait a minute, we know one of those.
Amazing.
And so we were delighted to be able to sit down with Hazel van der Waal, who is a theologically qualified personal trainer, was able to walk us through some thinking around how we think about our bodies, and then some really practical things about how we might think about looking after our physical health and our bodies.
And she might actually be the youngest ever podcast guest we've had. Do you think?
In this iteration of the podcast, I think that's true. Yeah. When we used to have interns, we did one with the interns. But yeah, she's definitely the youngest then. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't listen to her.
She's loaded with wisdom. Very wise.
Yeah,
it was very good and challenging as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might have even put into practice some of the things that she said.
Yeah, my family and I have now stopped eating standing up and we yell at one another when we do it.
That's brilliant. And I feel really bad whenever I do find myself eating standing up. There we go, so that's a freebie.
You will understand that in the next 30 minutes if you listen. Enjoy the podcast. We are delighted to have Hazel van der Waal with us today. It is a pleasure to have you on the podcast, Hazel.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Thank you. I'm so glad you asked me to be on.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to this one. I think, as we said off air, I think this is an area that I don't know that either Lisa or I would claim to be experts in. So we're excited to have you here. Just to quickly introduce you to our listeners, you are a graduate of London School of Theology and you have your master's from Goldsmiths in London, and you are now a PhD student at Durham University. Have I just about hit that right?
Yeah, that's it. Actually, that's very good. Well done, you.
Importantly for today, you are also a qualified PT and work in that space as well. Is that right?
I am indeed, yes. A theologically trained personal trainer.
Well, which is exactly why you're on the podcast, yeah. Because Lisa and I were having a conversation about the kind of people we might get on, and we were said, what we really need is a theologically qualified PT. And I went, wait a minute, I know one of those. So welcome. Yeah, I mean, it makes you a bit of a unicorn, I bet. I can't imagine there's that many others around. So,
well, for such a time as this, you know.
Well, there you go. There you go. It's great to have you here. We've got you here today because we'd love to have a conversation as part of our series about what it is to be a healthy leader, to think about our physical health and our how our bodies play a part in us serving God well and serving the church well. So thanks for being here and being along.
Yeah, I'm glad I can help.
Yeah, thanks, Hazel. It's really great to be with you today and to be chatting to you. As a fellow graduate of a great theological college as well. I guess we have been formed and shaped with quite a kind of Greek view of the body, mind and spirit, that really what matters is our minds and our spirits, and our body is kind of far behind. And maybe we're kind of waking up to a little bit of a different view. But maybe you could talk to us a little bit with both your theological head and your personal trainer head on around what you think is the spiritual significance of our physical bodies, assuming there is one at all.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, touching on that whole, I think as church leaders or churchgoers, we can be very keen to work in our spiritual parts, and we kind of seem to separate our spiritual and our physical, but a tendency to compartmentalize these realms, sometimes even a spectrum from, as I say, separate to even opposing forces, but really we need to challenge this dualism and overcome this mindset and embrace a more integrated understanding of human nature, really, and reject this dichotomy between spiritual activities and physical self-care, and actually recognize that we need to honor God with our bodies, and that is an essential aspect of our faith.
So how might we even start to, you know, it's just like when you've taken something on maybe over a lot of years, because some of us are a little bit older than you are, it's quite hard to, that dualistic thing is just integrated within you. How do we even start to change our mindset around that?
I mean, I tend to always want to start with scripture when we start looking at or talking about stuff like this. And obviously, I think everyone always brings up, you know, the classic 1 Corinthians, our body's temple of the Holy Spirit. But I think even Timothy himself, I think it's in 1 Timothy, he recognises that physical training is of some value to our present life, you know, alongside, obviously, godliness is the highest. The scripture always underscores the importance of balance and rest as well as physical health. Like, physical health isn't just about your exercise and your training, but also looking after your mind as well. Like, Jesus is a great example. Pretty busy guy, pretty hefty ministry demands, as do a lot of, you know, ministry people out there. But he still withdrew himself to solitary places for prayer and renewal. Physical health, it's not just about physical training. As much as that's important, we need to include this holistic well-being, self-care. And our brain is part of our bodies. What's going on up here massively dictates how we treat ourselves and our bodies. And that's often, we need to challenge our mindset and our brains first so we can then treat ourselves with the correct respect, I think. Yeah.
What would that look like in practice? Just that one bit, because I think that's a really interesting idea, the idea that the way we think about this is going to affect the way that we then are able to treat our bodies.
Yeah, I think caring for our bodies, to me, is not a luxury, but a necessity for fulfilling our responsibilities to serve others well. You know, reframing our thinking to recognise that investing in your health ultimately enables us to be more present for those who need us, to be more productive and effective in all areas of our lives. And it includes being healthy and present for ourselves, of course. You know, having the privilege of having such an able body, I want to be able to use it to our fullest. And starting with, you know, Jesus said he came to give his life and life to the fullest, and I want to be able to experience that. And it's a really use it or lose it. And for some, a painful reality, you know, I want to get to the age of 50 or 60, God willing, and be able to go on a walk to a cafe and chat with people that I love, or frolic on some hills in Scotland. I want to be able to see and experience the beauty and nature of the world. And life doesn't stop when you get older, but it can certainly feel that way when your body doesn't have capacity to do it all it once did at 20 or 30. So really, you know, looking at it, caring for bodies is not a luxury. It is a necessity if we want to show up for ourselves and for others.
Brilliant. So let's say we say, okay, you've answered the question. Our bodies are spiritually significant. And I think you have answered that question. And I also like the way, importantly, you integrated the mind into that answer, because they're not separate. However, and this is maybe more about your PT background than your theological background, this question. The reality is that probably in our culture today, the challenge for many people is not... the idea that we should look after our bodies, but the reality that we're so busy that finding time to look after our bodies is really difficult, especially those of us who find ourselves in sedentary jobs, you know, sat in Zoom for 4 hours a day or whatever other evil is set upon us. So how do we begin to care for our bodies when life is busy?
It does unfortunately come down to that prioritisation and time management. We need to acknowledge the reality that busy schedules and the challenge they pose to maintain our physical health, obviously, as you say. But we need to prioritise health by making it a non-negotiable aspect of our daily routine, same as brushing your teeth or, you know, washing your face, something like that. You're having your breakfast. Hopefully everyone's having their breakfast. Please have your breakfasts. We need to fuel ourselves properly. But making it a non-negotiable aspect of our daily routine. Some things that work for, you know, clients that I've worked with or even myself is scheduling workouts like appointments, but you wouldn't cancel your meetings or your doctor's appointments. So don't cancel appointments with yourself. Make it an appointment. Like, schedule it into your calendars, whether it's once or twice a week. You know, this brings in the being realistic, setting realistic goals, not saying, yeah, I'm going to schedule in 6-7 days a week. I'm going to be going a run for 1 hour every day. That's not realistic, even for myself, who I work out about 4 to 5 times a week, and that's realistic for me with a busy schedule. And breaking down these fitness activities into manageable chunks. Again, so you're not giving yourself, this whole day I'm going to spend 3 hours at the gym. I'm going to go for a swim, going to run, I'm going to weightlift. It's not realistic. And if you hit that barrier and you're like, I feel terrible, I can't do this, you're not going to want to do it again. So breaking it down to realistic goals, but really making it a non-negotiable scheduled appointment in your calendar. I'm sure calendars run most of our lives these days anyways. But also I want to say about embracing flexibility and adaptability, because especially during busy seasons of our lives, our schedules can be unpredictable. It's not always a nice set out, okay, my calendar says this, so I've got time to do that. We've got to be willing to adjust our workout goals and goals as needed, whether that's doing home-based workouts or incorporating physical activity into daily tasks, something as simple as walking to the shops, doing household chores even. There are some easy things that I can fit in even if I'm super busy.
That's really good, and I really like the bit about scheduling an appointment with yourself. I feel like that needs to happen quite a lot about different things in my life, actually. I mean, the reality is not just busy, although I think we would often say that, but actually that there's different seasons in life. So there are seasons when you feel much more like you can make all the choices for yourself and you're the main person you need to worry about. And then, you know, many people have a season with young kids and then the teenage kids bit. And maybe, you know, actually life just becomes more sedentary. How do we keep on prioritizing it? I think many of us do that whole January thing. And then we fall off the wagon. You know, we get discouraged, or we have a few weeks where, you know, we sort of meet ourselves coming backwards type of thing. How do you actually keep on prioritising that and not get to the stage where you just think, well, what's the point? I'm so far gone, it's not really worth bothering anymore. How do we do that?
I think we've really got to utilise our support systems. I mean, churches are so good at, we've got prayer groups and, you know, we meet up every Sunday and, I'll go and see so-and-so for lunch. So why not use that support group and system that you've already built up in your churches and actually seek support from, you know, your church family or your actual friends and family outside of church, or even making accountability partners has been a massive thing for me, where a friend or even my brother, for example, have you been to the gym? What's happened at the gym this week? Or how's the bike? Just asking stuff like that, and it kind of prompts people to keep in contact with you. But there's massive benefits of accountability and encouragement and shared experiences, as I'm sure we see, whether it's on Sundays and people are like, who's got a great story to share this week of how God's worked in your life? But sharing experiences of, I tell you what, I I went out for a walk today and I felt really good about it. Or it's quite simple things, but it's being able to utilize something that you've already built up in your church or your Christian friends and family, and actually utilizing it for your physical health as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Really good. What about that question of stages of life, though? Because I think that is really important. That just to tell my own story, I was super fit right into my 20s, and then I wrecked my knee twice, and I had a season of life where I couldn't exercise. And the truth is, probably never really got back to exercising because other things stole that time or that energy, or I just couldn't physically do it. And I'm still only in my 40s, so I have hope that I can get better before I get to play. It's not possible anymore. But you know, I don't think my story is unique in that sense, that there is a different season of life. So what does it look like for a man in his 40s or a woman in her 40s or whatever to with the different challenges of life to actually find that space for physical health when it's easy to be demotivated?
Yeah, I think quite often the thing that is very demotivating is when we strive for perfection, or, oh, I used to be able to do this, I used to be able to do that, or, oh, I've not got the perfect time to do something. We need to actually focus on progress rather than perfection, and celebrate each step forward regardless of how small it might be. So in those seasons where you are busy or you do have physical injuries or stuff like that, you know, you have to take time out of whatever physical stuff you're doing because you need to recover, you need to be able to rest, you need to be able to spend time with it with the young kids. But quite often we're like, oh, it's not the perfect time. I can't do all I used to be able to do. I can't do this exact great, amazing run I've got planned, or I can't go on these hikes anymore. So what's the point? But actually doing something is better than nothing. Absolutely. Because it's that, again, use it or lose it. You need to keep yourself moving, keep yourself going out. I mean, and again, when you have that mindset that it's a non-negotiable, well, I can go out to the shops, I can go for a walk to the shops, or I might just do some stretches every hour when I'm sitting down at work. I'm having to do all these online calls. Let me just stand up and go for a wee walk around and a wee stretch. It's not that you're like, oh, that's not very good, that's not very perfect, that's not very commendable, it's not something that I can post about on my stories or whatever on my socials, you know. Like, we aim for that kind of perfect thing that we see, whether it's from our friends or family or online, mm-hmm. and we're like, well, I can't get there, so what's the point? Mm-hmm. But doing something is always better than doing nothing.
I love that, focus on progress, not perfection. I actually think that's a major thing that stops you from doing stuff, isn't it? Especially if you look back and think, well, I used to be able to. It's so demoralizing, that feeling. Absolutely. And actually focusing on progress. Maybe we could manage that, Glenn. What do you reckon? We could focus on progress rather than perfection.
It works at so many levels. I'm thinking as I'm listening to you there, because you know, for people like me who were competitive mm-hmm. in our sports, it's really difficult not to be in that space. But I'm too old for that now. Can't do that. Mm. So what do you do? I have over time wrestled with my weight. I know a bunch of other people that have done that too. And the problem is, you set a goal, you think, I want to be that. And when it takes either too long, or you have Christmas comes and you eat too much turkey and you think, oh, just, I can't be. But the idea of progress rather than perfection is actually the goal is not the goal at all. And to tie it into what you were saying earlier, this is about, you know, our bodies being part of our worship of God and of us recognizing what we've been given. That the progress part, we embrace that. We embrace that in every other part of our spiritual life.
Absolutely.
Right?
It's
brilliant. Absolute genius.
Yeah, I know. I think as you say like that, your spiritual journey, I mean, you know that there's no end goal to my spiritual journey. I don't get to a certain level of, oh, I'm pretty much like Jesus now. I think I'm good now, you know. It's a lifelong journey, just as a fitness journey is never a location that you get to, or it's never, oh, I'm at the end point now. It's a lifelong thing, and again, as you say, life changes as you go along. And you just got to keep navigating that. Yeah, I think there's so many parallels with the spiritual and the physical, like, journey or health. And it strikes me often, you know, when I have these conversations, yeah, actually, wow, that is actually very similar. And I do know this and I can implement that because I have been.
One of our other podcasts in this series talks about financial health. And I just want to bring those two into conversation because there is a real temptation to think, oh, I want to get healthy, want to get fit, therefore I have to join the gym. Mm. And the gym's expensive for most people. Yeah. And absolutely. Certainly it can be a stretch for many. So how, I guess the question is, how do you find ways to be physically fit on a budget is maybe the best way to put that.
Yeah, well, again, I think it comes back to also utilising your communities around you or finding community-based fitness initiatives. And I think there's an abundance of free to low-cost resource available for fitness activities. There's a lot of community walking or running clubs or outdoor fitness meetups, group exercise classes, even some volunteer-led wellness programmes offered through whether it's local churches or schools or community centres. And also it comes back to you get a nice social connection, your accountability and the support that can be gained from participating in groups like that. It's always the opportunity to make new friends and share experiences and stay motivated. But if you're more of a solo workout person, you know, whether it's going on a walk, a jog, a hike, cycle in your local parks, nature trails, neighbourhoods, there's also so many benefits of going out in nature. You're enjoying yourself, your mental and your physical health, and fresh air, sunlight. We can all do a wee bit of sunlight when we're inside so often. But also I do get the weather's not always outdoor permitting, especially when you're in Scotland. But I think actually lockdown taught me a lot about home-based workouts and DIY equipment. It's very convenient and affordable to actually do quite a lot of home-based workouts that are very budget-friendly alternative to gym memberships or expensive equipment. You've got a versatility of bodyweight exercise that require no equipment. You know, you've got your lovely squats, lunges, push-ups, planks, burpees, all the favourite buzzwords can be performed in your own home. I can recommend a lot of online workout videos, fitness apps or streaming services like just YouTube and something, whether it's you're liking yoga, your Pilates, or whether you're thinking, no, I want a really short, high intensity workout that I can do in my living room. Did a lot of them during workout. One thing I also enjoyed, if you're wanting a bit more of a challenge, thinking bodyweight isn't very fun, I loved during lockdown putting, like, using random household items as weights, for example. So putting like cans of beans in a backpack and using that as a weight, or like a massive jug of water or something like that. We're trying to recreate a leg press by using the sofa. I don't know if I'd recommend this. It didn't damage anything, but lying on the ground and pushing the sofa away. I mean, you get very, very creative with things that are already in your house, and you can make it fun for yourself, and you can have whatever music playing. Obviously, going to a gym, they're playing some royalty-free music or music's not quite to your taste. The house is all yours. Go for it, you know?
Wow. Unfortunately, that means we actually have to do it. I feel like, I think you've given amazing answers to how can we do this cheaply and or for free even. So that's that excuse out of the way, isn't it?
And Hazel, it would be great if you could let us know some of those links to some places. Absolutely. That we could send folks, because I think one of the challenges is like, okay, that's great, and I heard all those words like burpees and planks and squats, but I don't know how to do them properly, or I don't know where to go. And, you know, obviously, if budget is an issue, then getting your own PT is unlikely to be available. But here's the other thing. You made me put my mission hat on for a second, because I realised that if people are looking around and going, oh, there's no budget conscious health possibility in our community, then why doesn't the church go and find somebody who could run a wee fitness class and put it on for the community? Awesome. Absolutely. Mission opportunity to engage a community if that doesn't exist. So anyway, we'll give that one for free.
That's a good idea.
So if people check the show notes, we'll have some links to some stuff that Hazel would recommend. You can have a look at to get started on
that's
budget.
Good. Just one thing that I think does affect us. So a lot of us will be doing things that have a lot of adrenaline connected to them. So there can be that kind of Sunday thing, or it could be a challenging meeting, often in the evening as well. And I think it would be kind of honest to say that a lot of people kind of get home and just either want to eat that kind of quick fix type food, or have a couple of glasses of wine. And actually those things become quite a significant part of how we treat our bodies and our physical health. And so I kind of wonder, you know, it's the adrenaline rush or fall doesn't go away. How do we manage that better in a way that doesn't end up like a car crash to the really good work that we've put in the 6 days before or whatever?
Absolutely. No, I think it's such really important you bring that up, because I think it starts with acknowledging this common experience of the post-Sunday crash in mood or energy level, or your adrenaline crashes after work or whatever it is. And yeah, these crashes are attributed to adrenaline and stress during perhaps busy work activities and services. It also takes a massive, as I'm sure everyone is aware, physical and emotional toll that these adrenaline spikes followed by crashes have on the body, with like exhaustion, irritability, mood swings, cravings and disrupted eating habits. Obviously, I think you can Google it and they'll say stuff like, oh, incorporate relaxation and stress management techniques into a post-service routine, for example. But obviously, like, that's not always going to be, you can't always, oh, I'll go on a walk, I'll do a hobby that I really enjoy after you're feeling tired, or you're just not in the mood. You're just not in the mood. And I get that. Obviously, they are useful some days. Some days it will be like, right, you know what, I'm going out on a walk, or I'm going to turn off my phone. Nobody can contact me between lunch and whatever time after a service. You know, deep breathing exercises, meditation, gentle stretching to promote relaxation, reduce tension. They'll say all that kind of stuff. And we should prioritise that thing. Whether it's making a routine that works for you, but I think it comes with being aware of your actions and what, like, how are you behaving. For me, for example, when I'd come home after a very long day, say I'd been on worship band all morning, I used to be at a church that had four services a day, so I'd be on worship band, two services in the morning, we'd be starting at 6 a.m, I'd get back around 2, I'd be exhausted. I'm just wanting some food. You open up the fridge and you're just eating everything that you can see. And it's not very, you don't feel great afterwards either. You know, it doesn't actually solve anything. I mean, first of all, we've got to cultivate a non-judgmental attitude towards the food in the body, because that doesn't help anybody, whether you're being judgmental towards yourself in behaviours that you've learnt or picked up or whatever it is. So making sure that you're not talking badly to yourself, because again, what happens up in your brain affects how we treat our bodies. But turning to hunger cues and fullness cues isn't always easy as well. But to say, like, reflecting on my own behaviour, eating standing up is a big red flag for me, and some alarm bells start ringing when I'm going around and I'm like, oh, I'm in the kitchen and I'm just shoving whatever I can into my face. I'm not actually sitting down eating my food. Because food is a massive comfort for me, and I'm sure many others, as it provides your brain with that nice surge of dopamine release, a good, like, feel-good chemical for the brain. But I've come to realise eating then for me is to quell any uncomfortable feelings like stress or nervousness or even anger sometimes. I'm angry and I'm going to go and eat some food or whatever, and I'll crunch on something that'll make me feel good. And it does in the short term. But instead of, it's recognising that behaviour, right? It's often recognising behaviours, whatever it might be, whether it's slumping on the couch, eating something that you've just grabbed out the snack drawer. But it's learning to actually sit with those feelings that you're having rather than trying to mask them, and letting yourself reflect on exactly why you're feeling what you're feeling and what the trigger is, rather than, yeah, eating. So, I mean, for me, practical tips for eating, I think that's probably the biggest thing with adrenaline. It's slowing down during meal times and actually savouring each bite. So I'm standing up, I'm not actually tasting what I'm eating, I'm just putting things into my mouth, right? But actually paying attention to the taste, the texture, satisfaction and satiation, and making sure I sit down and have everything I need in front of me that consists of a full meal. And sometimes when you've got snack cravings, don't think, oh, I just have a wee bit. Because it never really works just having a wee bit. It's more, rather than taking away the snack, how can you add more to the snack to make it satiating for yourself? Say you want chocolate. Okay, well, what can I have alongside the chocolate that then will actually fill me up and I don't need to keep snacking on something? Because if you have the chocolate, oh, quite fancy and crisps are... oh, I quite fancy this as well afterwards. And actually, you know what? Let me just go and get myself some toast and cheese. That's pretty quick and easy. And while I'm eating that, oh, that's in the fridge there. But sitting down, your full meal and deciding, right, I want this. What can I add to it to, yeah, satiate me? Does that help?
Yeah, I think so. I remember the first time I ever heard anybody talk about this was 20 years ago or something. And it was a guy who'd been a pastor for about 40 years, and he said he discovered he had to walk home from church. He was in America, right? And as most of our listeners know, nobody walks anywhere in America. Like, you don't do that. And so he started walking home from church because he had to find a way to develop a habit that wasn't just about finding some way to burn off that adrenaline, which in his case was food, but you know, I know loads of people that for whom it's other things, but for him the simple act of choosing to walk home, his wife would go home with a car and he'd walk home, was enough that by the time he got home he had a reasonable appetite. They had an appetite because he'd done some exercise rather than, you know, I just need to eat because I've got to burn off all this, whatever's happening in me. Uh-huh. And it was him that said, look, there's a reason rock stars become drug addicts. Mm-hmm. You know, like, dealing with adrenaline is a complicated thing. And so it's worth just recognising the truth of it and finding habits that can be helpful.
That's really good, isn't it? I mean, it's like, it is that being attentive. It's not like actually these things are a big surprise after a Sunday or after a deacon's meeting or a church meeting. It's not a surprise. So we know that we feel like that. So it is then working out how can we engage with ourselves and what would work best for us in that context.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you mentioned earlier, but I think it's maybe just worth noting that sleep is a really important part of this whole thing too.
Yeah, definitely. I think it comes into like self-care strategies and making boundaries for yourself, but yeah, creating good sleep hygiene and establishing that for yourself and being strict with yourself about that and with others, and that's where those boundaries come in, is so important. Maintaining a sleep schedule has done wonders for me. It also means that you've got more energy the next day to actually feel like you can get up and do something rather than just, oh, I'm so tired, didn't sleep very well, I can just sit at home today, I'll be all right. And then you stay up till midnight, 1 a.m. the next day, doing whatever you're on your phone or watching something or responding to emails, doing work that you didn't quite catch up on. But creating calming bedtime routines, optimising your sleep environment and limiting stimulating or stressful activities before sleep is useful. But yeah, I mean, sleep is a huge thing. Rest is so important to your physical body, you know, getting down those cortisol levels, which do end up making you retain water and eventually, you know, they stop your hunger cues from working properly and things like that. So sleep is huge. Rest is so important.
It's good, isn't it? Sleep and you lose weight. I'm feeling that coming on.
I know.
Yeah.
almost feels like cheating, doesn't it?
Fantastic. Hazel, this has been brilliant.
Yeah.
Such a different perspective for us. Really helpful and healthy in so many different ways. Really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's been great. I've enjoyed this.
Thank you.